Every who down in Whoville liked Christmas a lot. But the Grinch, who lived just north of Whoville, did not. Many of you are familiar with the story of how the Grinch stole Christmas. Growing up, I knew it, but one thing that was never part of my Christmas experience was watching the animated television program of how the Grinch stole Christmas. I never saw that because that was a day before of recording television programs and so forth. Because every Christmas Eve they showed it on television, and every Christmas Eve we went to candlelight worship. And so I never saw the television program of how the Grinch stole Christmas. I still have never seen it. You know, now these days with 200 channels and the ability to record, I thought I should record it. And so this year I did. However, I recorded the movie and not the animated version of the story. I don't want to see the movie. I want to see this. But I share with you then, the Grinch hated Christmas. The whole Christmas season. Now please don't ask why. No one quite knows the reason. It could be his head wasn't screwed on just right. It could be perhaps that his shoes were too tight. But I think the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was two sizes too small. But whatever the reason, his heart or his shoes, he stood there on Christmas Eve hating the Whos, staring down from his cave with a sour, grinchy frown, all the warm, lighted windows below in their town. For he knew every Who down in Whoville beneath was busy now hanging a mistletoe wreath. And there hanging their stockings, he snarled with a sneer, "Tomorrow is Christmas, it's practically here." And he growled with his Grinch fingers, nervously drumming, "I must find some way to stop Christmas from coming." And so as you know the story then, the Grinch cleverly disguises himself as Santa. But instead of taking gifts into the homes, the Grinch goes into the homes and takes away the stockings and the gifts and the food for the feast, as well as the Christmas tree, home after home after home. The Gospel of John does not have a Christmas story. There's no birth narrative. Kind of Grinch-like. Anyone who heard the Gospel according to John, never heard the Christmas story. But also, John's Gospel does not have the story of Jesus' baptism, nor the temptation in the wilderness, no ascension story, and also no parables of Jesus. John's Gospel was written much later than the others. It was written after the destruction of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was no longer the center of the religious world for the people of Israel. And the story of Jesus was going out into the world. And this was a world that had been influenced greatly by the Greeks, by the Greek language, and by their teachings. And so John does not begin his gospel with the Christmas story that we are so familiar, but he begins it with the Logos, or the Word. Logos is the Greek word for word, and was used to describe the ability to reason, and also to describe the mind of God. And so John in his gospel writes that the Word became flesh. Not very Christmas-like, but there you have it. The Word became flesh. God came to be among His people. It doesn't have shepherds or angels or the gifts of the wise men, which were gold, frankincense, and humor. But it does tell how God came to be among His people. The Apostle Paul wrote in a similar way. Paul wrote how the visible, the things that we see, leads us to understand the invisible. He talks about the world and how the world has such amazing order. And so therefore, it helps us to understand behind that world is the invisible, that which gave it order, that which created. You can look in space. And over time, we have discovered how in space, it is predictable. One has the ability to forecast the movements of the planets and the moons. There is order behind it. We can also look at ourselves and our ability to think and to reason and to grow in our knowledge. That our experiences with remorse and with regret and with guilt provide order. These things are described as windows that look into eternity. And so in Jesus, we look into God. And so John writes how the Word of God has come among us. The mind of God is seen in this person, Jesus. The heart of God is discovered as well. And in Jesus, we see God's attitude toward humanity, toward us, and how it opens up possibilities. And that God makes us His children. As we just sang in Away in the Manger, we sing of us as God's children, and His presence would be with us here and now. God has established a relationship with each one of us, His children. God initiated this relationship as the Word became flesh. And God continues to sustain it. In Jesus, we see God. There was a multiple choice test given one time, and you know how multiple choices questions work. I often have A, B, C, and then D. Often D is none of the above. However, there was a typographical error, which made the question actually very easy then. But in looking at Jesus and describing God, we have all of the above. All of the above. And Jesus, we see a God who is characterized by His grace. This grace is an expression of great beauty. For this grace is undeserved. But there is a striking beauty in its giving, in its being shared with us. In Jesus, we see the truth, what God is like. And as we have been taught and as we have heard, to know the truth, and the truth makes us free. The truth of God, the grace of God, the love of God, the forgiveness of God frees us from our sinfulness and makes us free. And in Jesus, we experience God's glory. We are in the presence of God. When we are close to God, we share the glory of God. So you have your Christmas story. You have your manger and your stable. You also have, according to John, how the Word became flesh. And what we see in Jesus, we see what God is like. And understanding what God is like, we can see then how we can be His children. And how He has made us His children. How God has established a relationship with us. And how God's presence, the glory of God, transforms us and changes us. How we share the nature of God and the character of God. How it affects our hearts and our minds. And so as we read and how the Grinch stole Christmas, you can take away the presents and the trees and the gifts and the feasts. It is the Grinch who says, "Pooh-pooh to the Whos." He was grinchishly humming. They're finding out now that no Christmas is coming. They're just waking up. I know just what they'll do. Their mouths will hang open a minute or two. Then the Whos down in Whoville will all cry, "Boo-hoo." "That's a noise," grinned the Grinch, "that I simply must hear." So he paused, and the Grinch put his hand to his ear. And he did hear a sound rising over the snow. It started in low, then it started to grow. But the sound wasn't sad. Why, this sound sounded merry. It couldn't be so, but it was merry. Very. He stared down at Whoville. The Grinch popped his eyes. Then he shook. What he saw was a shocking surprise. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing without any presence at all. He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it came just the same. And the Grinch, with his Grinch feet ice cold in snow, stood puzzling and puzzling. How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. And he puzzled 3 hours till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they say, that the Grinch's small heart grew 3 sizes that day. And the minute his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he whizzed with his load through the bright morning light, and he brought back the toys and the food for the feast, and he himself, the Grinch, carved the roast beast. Merry Christmas.